if you think that everything around you is being designed, if the majority of people designing those things are white middle-class men, then the majority of those things are going to be designed for the same sort of people. So you're going to be excluding a lot of society. So people will just sit down and feel like the world isn't quite designed for them.
Welcome to Series 3 of Greater Than 11%, a podcast whose aim is to educate, inspire, and demystify creative careers, all the meanwhile promoting some awesome women and non-binary folk. For episode 97, I'm joined by Claire Blythe, founder and managing partner of Red Setter, a specialist PR agency for design consultancies and corporate design teams. Claire is also the co-founder of the Design Community Hub, a digital platform for professionals across the design world to give their time, knowledge, and expertise to support the next generation of designers. Initially drawn to science, Claire left the University of Leeds with a BSc in biology in 1997, but bagged a job on graduating with David Knight Advertising as an account executive, working with brands such as the Radio Times and the BBC. During her 3.5 years with the firm, she worked her way up to the new business account manager role before leaving to join Siren, formerly known as Kugel, as a business development director. She then spread her wings and went freelance to become a business development consultant for a number of years. But nearly 14 years ago to the day, she founded Red Setter and has grown the company and team during that time, working with the world's most exciting design agencies to get them noticed and chosen. Claire, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your career and what you're doing at the Design Community Hub. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I've just given a little whistle-stop tour of your career to date, but as I mentioned, you did a BSc in biology and that you were interested in becoming a scientist early on. So I'd love to hear your reflections of what happened with that initial ambition and the path that led you to being the founder of a PR agency and a managing partner.
Gosh, you know what? If I look back to what I actually wanted to do when I was at school, I still remember having a conversation with our careers teacher. I think everyone's got a ropey careers teacher. I certainly did when I was at school. I had this conversation with our careers teacher and said that I'd really like to be a graphic designer. And she said, don't be so ridiculous. It's way too competitive. Do something else. So I don't even think, looking back to it now, she would have known what a graphic designer was. I certainly wouldn't have had any idea about the world of brand or anything like that. So I kind of just thought, oh, okay, fair enough. I was 14, 15. What else do I enjoy? And I really like biology. So went to university and did a degree in biology and just never really felt it was my passion. Felt I kind of grappled around with little bits that I wanted to do, like, I don't know, with immunology and looking at malaria and stuff like that. But as much as it still just didn't really feel like me. And it was only when I moved to London and kind of happened on a job working at DKA, which is David Knight Advertising, that I really got in my head into design and brand. And that's my real passion.
What was it? What led you? Was it just by chance that you got a job with David Knight Advertising? Or was it that you felt that you kept being drawn to that? And then kind of what happened then? Because you've done many things. Like I said, you spread your wings, you went freelance for a bit, and then you ended up founding a company. So I'd love to hear how that progressed.
It kind of was by chance, but I've always loved design. I've always loved the art side of design, and that at the time, sort of in my teenage years, didn't really understand the separation between art and design. Probably into my mid-20s, actually, working in design for quite a lot, kind of realised the actual separation. And I was looking around in London for lots of different jobs, some with a scientific background. I was looking at recruitment at one point for scientific jobs. I thought that maybe some kind of sales thing I'd really like to get into, but basically met a friend of a friend in the Slug and Lettuce in Kingston when I was about 21. And he said his girlfriend was looking for someone to do account exec work and new business work, sort of very early stage new business work for an ad agency in London. And I got in touch and said, I met your boyfriend last night in a bar. It's an odd place to start a conversation. He said that you're looking for someone, and sort of went from there, really. I realized pretty early on that I just absolutely loved it and it's a real passion. The depth that you can go into with design and brand. I worked on the design side of David Knight Advertising for their in-house design studio. And worked on getting in clients such as the Radio Times and stuff like that. I think it's where all the sort of the clever thought is all around the sort of brand area.
Oh, I love that. I love those chance meetings that set you off on a path that becomes almost like a thing that you always knew you were meant to do. Those things that kind of just arrive. Yeah.
It kind of just happened, but it felt totally right. One of those sort of moments in my career where I thought, am I in the right, doing the right thing? Am I in the right place? It's always just felt totally right. I just wanted to get further into it and deeper into it, basically. I do think that sort of scientific rigor has really helped. I think that the way I approach things now is in a very rigorous scientific way. I do look at all the, look at all sides of what we're doing. If we're opening up a new side of the business, if we're looking at a client campaign, anything, you look at all the effects it could possibly have.
So fast forward to today, you're now kind of founder and managing director of Red Setter. So I'd love to know a little bit more about what Red Setter do and kind of why you decided to found a company. And, you know, it's nearly 14 years it's been up and running and it's very successful. So yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, Red Setter is all about, it's all about my sort of ultimate mission of amplifying the voice and value of design. I don't think design gets has the reputation it should. I don't think most people realize what design is. And certainly like Red Setter concentrates on generally brand design, a bit of retail design, that kind of thing. But design as a whole doesn't have a reputation that it deserves. That I think the general public don't generally realize that everything around them has been designed. Like someone will have a job as a cutlery designer or furniture designer of every sort of brand, piece of tech, everything's got something behind it with someone actually designing that. And I think it's such a massive gap. I think it's something that I'd like to lessen. And on a sort of basic level, working with the best design agencies in the world, we're such exciting clients. By raising their profile, we're raising the profile of design, but just want to get further into it, basically, which is why I sort of set up lots of other stuff as well. So many school kids don't have the experience I did and won't be told it's too competitive and just dismissed outright because they don't quite understand what it is. I think it will massively affect the diversity situation in design if everybody knows what design is and can see it as a career for them.
Yeah, and as a viable career, because it is lumped in with the, oh, it's the artsy thing. Can you make money from it? In addition to the competitive thing, if there's, you know, little knowledge about it. But actually, these are viable jobs. And as you've just explained, you know, it touches our lives in every different way, you know, design, everything we do from picking up a fork to a notepad. Can you talk maybe a little bit more about your role as managing partner? What the day-to-day looks like?
Yeah, my role as managing partner, so basically, I run the Red Setter with my business partner and my husband, Alex. We split the roles of, basically split the MD roles. So we've both got a managing partner role. We've both got very different skills, but they complement each other really well. So for me, I think it's really helpful to have sort of two people with different skills in the role. My day-to-day is very much about the external stuff. So I love meeting up with clients and seeing new clients and meeting the best design agencies in the world and talking to them and talking about how we can get their voice out there and therefore raise the sort of voice and value of design. It's a lot about just getting the Red Setter name out there as well, so people actually know about us and know that we're an option to do that, that, you know, we're really good at PR and have this sort of expertise in brand. So it can be anything. It can be Wednesdays, I tend to do all my internal meetings. So I'll be in the office all day talking to our senior account directors, making sure everything's okay with them and helping them as much as possible to manage their teams. The rest of the time, sort of like, yeah, let's forget about the COVID period. That kind of messed everything up. But now it's getting back to I'm up in London seeing clients and actually meeting people face to face again and working on the design community hub and working on other projects I've got going and lots of different things, lots of plates spinning, which is exactly how I like it.
Amazing. So you have said up in London, so I should say you are Brighton based. And you also just mentioned the design community hub, which is like an amazing initiative. So I'd love for you to maybe talk about how it came about and how people can get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. The design community hub, it was Callum Lumsden, who is a friend of mine who runs a design agency called Lumsden Design. He was talking about, basically, he didn't want to lose a generation of designers because of COVID. It's the whole problem that if you go back, if you look for designers now who have got about 14 years experience, you don't really find them because the crash in 2008 design agencies and branding agencies just stopped hiring juniors. So you just don't tend to, it tends to be like a couple of 2-3 years where you've just kind of lost an intake. So we didn't want that to happen this time. And we didn't want the juniors that are leaving, well, people that are leaving design school and wanting to get into design. We didn't want them leaving the industry, basically. And all sorts of people, like, you know, junior account managers, the strategic side of stuff, the all the different sides that come together within design and brand, wanted to keep them in the industry. So that was the initial conversation. And then Callum got involved, asked Deborah from the DBA and Jonathan from, well, it was Elmwood at the time, or he was involved in it at the time, and a few others, Tim from Fitch, Phil and Claire, they set up the Podge lunches. They just know so many people in design, it kind of helped bring the whole thing together. But basically it was about realizing that there wasn't really a central hub to design. You've got the DBA, that's much more on the business side of things. You've got the DNAD, who do a lot more on the advertising, but on the design as well. But it didn't seem to be like a central hub where people can come to. I felt it was still very much, I don't know, leave your design school or want to get into design. And it just depends what agencies you happen to have come across in that time of who you'd approach for a job. There's no like central place where you can go to, and lots of the agencies would just be there. That's basically what we wanted to do, a design community hub. So get all the design agencies together. And we've got a guild platform, basically, that anyone can post on and just talk about junior roles and talk about internships, paid internships, obviously, because that's very important. Yeah, we don't do non-paid internships. And just a central place where people can hook up and get together.
When I was looking at it, what I loved about it was for those that with the experience and what they can offer, but also for those that are seeking support, mentorship, or jobs. And it seems like this great kind of melting pot of experience that can come together and kind of connect. I really, really loved it. And diversity is obviously a really important part of that as well.
Massively. Yeah, that's, I mean, one of the points is it shouldn't be about who you know. It should be, if there's a central place that anyone can go to, then anyone's got access to all of the design agencies. So it won't be a case of your uncle happens to work at a design agency in town and can get you in an internship or something like that. Getting rid of all that and getting a central hub where people can go to and everyone's got equal chance based on their own talent rather than who they know. That's what I want to get rid of.
Yeah. And it's also, even if you've got a curiosity, I think one of the big issues that I found, especially when starting the podcast, but also in, you know, being a lecturer, is that a lot of people don't understand what's out there and they don't know who to ask. If they don't have that uncle in advertising, they don't know where to find the information. And yes, the internet's amazing, but to ask those questions to help you join the dots doesn't always work. You know, you've got a definition of what a role is, but you don't really know how it fits in a wider organization. And if you could do that. So I think having a space where people can ask questions in a very safe, open, generous environment is just perfect. Exactly.
Yeah, it should make things a lot more equal. One of many ways of doing it. But yeah, I think it's a really good start.
I love that. Absolutely love that. So through both of these organizations, you have, like, from my outside perspective, I get the sense that you've got like a roll up the sleeves, jump in, get involved to ensure that diversity is a big part of Future Creative. So I'm wondering why that has become so important and embedded in everything that you're doing, kind of in the company, but also in this platform that you've created to be able to connect people.
First of all, I'm a big advocate of just getting in and doing things. I think you can over question stuff so much, and you can sit there and talk about these amazing ideas, but if you don't just go ahead and do it and not worry about everything being perfect. I'm a big fan of just getting involved and starting something and then working on it as it's in progress and making it the best you can, but not worry about everything being absolutely perfect, because I'd never get started in anything. But why, I mean, well, why the diversity and inclusion side of things is so important? I think it has a major effect on society. If you think that everything around you has been designed, if the majority of people designing those things are white middle-class men, then the majority of those things are going to be designed for the same sort of people. Everyone intrinsically, to a certain extent, designs for people like themselves. So you're going to be excluding a lot of society. So people will just sit down and feel like the world isn't quite designed for them, which has all sorts of problems in society. And I'm also a big fan of just chipping away at what I can actually change. Do you know a guy called Mo Gawdat?
Yeah, I do. Someone recommended a podcast that he's done recently. I haven't listened to it yet.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah, I definitely recommend his podcast. He's a really, really interesting guy.
Yeah.
And he's all about happiness, basically, and how you can be as happy as you can. And one of the many things he said was to become happy yourself, like to be as happy as you can. Do what you can and do what you're best at, but don't worry about everything else. So I kind of was in a situation a few years ago where I would be sitting there thinking, but what about climate change? And what about this? And what about that? And what about, you know, the situation like at the moment in Ukraine and Russia, and there's so much going on. And it would be really easy just to sit there and think, oh my God, it's all just too much. If you can kind of block that out to a certain extent, whilst being a good citizen, it's not like I'm not going to stop, you know, still recycle and still do all that kind of stuff, but not sit there really worrying, but doing nothing about climate change because it's not my thing. This is something I feel I can have an impact on. And I think I can affect how diverse design is in for the future. And therefore, how people feel about what's designed around them. I think it's that kind of thing of concentrate on something that you can actually change. If everyone did that, hopefully it has a bit more impact.
Yeah, I think that's such wise words, Claire. I think there's two things you've said there. First and foremost is perfectionism. Like, it's just squashes everything, right? You don't get started. Or when you do something, it's not good enough, so you don't get any joy or happiness from it because you're striving for something that you can never attain. That was a hard lesson for me to learn in my life. What you said about meeting that person in a bar and then going off, and that's taken you on a path that you absolutely love and you're passionate about. Mm. These little moments can have massive changes. We don't always see the changes that we are doing. That point of just chipping away, it'll pay off somewhere down the line, but you might not get to see it, right?
I still have that problem with perfectionism. Like, I love painting and art and that sort of side of things. Yeah. I really want to get into it, but I've got such an image in my head of how great it will be when I do it. I'm now 46 and haven't done it 20 years. It's still there and it still annoys me. But generally, if I can chip away at not being that.
All right, I'm going to come back to your role. And I'm wondering, what skills would you say are needed in terms of being a managing partner? Because if someone was thinking about someone who maybe is into design or in the creative sector and is thinking, I'd like to found my own company, whatever that may be, what would you say is needed for the skills to do that?
I think it's got two sides. I mean, it's kind of easy for me to say two sides because there's two of us, but my side would be the skills of being able to get what you've done known. So go out and spread the word. Spread the message of what you can do and how you can change things for people. So good communication skills, you know, really enjoying, liking being around people and meeting people. Having that bigger thing you actually want to change and being able to just start things and actually make them happen, I think is pretty important. But Alex, my business partner and my husband, brings all the skills I don't have. So he brings all the detail of the whole thing, which is I'm much more big picture over here. It's fair enough being like that, but if no one's there to sort out all the details, it'll fall apart internally quite quickly. So Alex is really good at managing people and giving them proper career paths and making them realize that their reviews do actually matter and giving them, guiding people on what they actually need to do in their role at the time and giving them something to aim for the future, so everyone's continually learning and getting better. So he's really good at guiding that sort of internal process. He's also a really good journalist, so can spot all the sort of angles people are looking for. But yeah, I think it's a combination of that sort of detail on how to run the business with the sort of more communications base getting out there.
And how do you, especially being creative and very articulate and kind of interested in people, how do you marry the commercial side of things with the creative side of things? Because selling creativity is not always the easiest thing to do.
Gosh, I'm not 100% sure I do to a certain extent. There's a certain level of, we've got a minimum fee that we charge because that's what we need to do to make an impact. And there's only a certain size or ambition of agency that will be able to do that. So I don't know, the commercial side kind of sorts itself out anyway. As much as I'd love to work with some of the smaller, really creative agencies, it doesn't always work out because it just won't work out with their budgets and stuff. I don't think I am the most commercially minded when I look at stuff like this. I generally will like to meet branding agencies and design agencies and people that really excite me and really think, God, they're doing major things in changing the world themselves. That's who I want to work with. and it usually just works out.
You talked about it before, about, you know, dreaming about doing painting and things like that. I wonder, as a managing partner of two organizations that are driven by creativity, how do you have the balance of running a business but also allowing space for being creative?
In my head, there isn't really a balance that's needed. I'm not the sort of person who kind of worries about or even considers that whole work-life balance. So that doesn't mean to say that I work around the clock 24 hours or anything like that. Got pretty fixed working hours where I actually will work from 9 to 5, 9 to 6, something like that, very occasionally in the evening, but it's probably once a quarter or something like that. So I do have very fixed boundaries around that, but everything I do at work is really creative. So it's all about just being as creative you can with all of the decisions you make in work. It isn't split like that. And the creative side certainly isn't split from what I actually do at Red Setter. Red Setter and the Design Community Hub is just constant creativity, basically.
It's almost like a creative practice, but it's wrapped up in a business.
Yeah.
Not to say that any disservice, but, you know, what you're doing is very much your own creativity, and you're
Absolutely.
Working with clients and supporting other people, and that is the kind of creative element that is driving you forward.
Yeah, it's that constant creativity of what to do next, how to solve this problem, where to move on to, that sort of, I do feel it's constantly creative. I also have the much more, you know, traditional ways of feeling creativity, or just things I like doing, like going to art galleries and all that sort of stuff, and listening to endless podcasts, watching the right movies that I'm really interested in, and learning loads and loads like that. And I think that's all sort of fuels creativity. But generally, it's just being within the business, reading as much as I can, learning as much as I can.
I'm wondering if you can tell me what's been the biggest challenge in your career.
When COVID hit would be the biggest challenge I've ever had. It was much more of a challenge than even like setting up Red Setter and growing it from the early days and everything, because that was just sort of see what happens. But getting to the point where we work with about 30 of the sort of like the best generally independent agencies worldwide, about 20% of our clients phoned up in that first week and handed the notice in and said they weren't sure what's going to happen. They didn't know, you know, what's going to happen with the economy. In actual fact, only one of them who worked in hospitality went ahead and actually did hand the notice in. But that first week or two where you had, clients handing the notice in, me thinking, I don't know where this is all going to go. Who knows what's going to happen with the economy of the world? What's going to happen with this whole thing? What's going to happen to the design sector? It's the same time as homeschooling happening and all that kind of thing. So kids needing sort of attention there, everyone being trapped in the house and needing to rework 30 of our clients' comms plans completely to fit a different world at the same time was a massive, massive challenge. I think it's worked out. God, this sounds, but I don't mean it's worked out well, as in obviously COVID's been horrendous and that kind of, the benefits we've got from drawing inwards a little bit at the time have been quite amazing. There wasn't much else that we could focus on. We could focus on our clients and we could focus on being the best that we could. We've now got such rigorous internal processes. We've gone through everything we do and tried to make it the best it can be. I do think it gave us that internal focus that we needed that has made Red Setter a better company. It's kicked off stuff like the Design Community Hub. It's kicked off a few other things I've got in mind for the future. So it was a massive challenge, but personally, Red Setter has come out of it a lot better.
You know, of course, it was a pandemic. I mean, it was dire and obviously a lot of people lost their lives, but actually it did reset a lot of things in culturally and society in many different countries that I think are for the benefit. You know, this whole, you can't work from home culture, especially
Absolutely.
Within the creative sector, has completely changed. And it actually has really changed people's lives for the better in terms of their mental health and going forward. And I see that as a huge positive.
I didn't think you could work from home particularly. I know you can work from home, but I certainly didn't think this sort of hybrid way of working would work for us. I'm from Red Setter. I just didn't think you'd have that team spirit, and I was just totally wrong. You can, and we do.
Yeah, and I think that to me has been a significant change, especially with a lot of creatives I talk to. Like I said, talking about their mental health, being able to work from home and then rather than having to travel after work or battle through peak hour tubes or trains or whatever it may be, to be able to go for a walk and So yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, through all tough times, it's, I think, quite a positive thing to look at the benefits and what has come out of it and things that we can change. So, but yeah, it sounds quite nail biting in that first week, getting all those notices. Oh my God, it must have been very stressful for you.
Oh my gosh, definitely. Yeah, it was just personally stressful of what's going to happen to my own company. There's, what, 23 of us at Redsetter at the moment. What's going to happen to everybody that works with us and what's going to be the result? But it has, I think it's actually, yeah, helped us be a much stronger, better company with much better working practices.
I can feel it through everything we've been talking about that you do love what you do, but could you maybe tell me what you love about having your own company, working with your fabulous team, and also setting up the design community hub? What is it you love about what you do?
One of the things I love about working in design is the opportunity is never to, you're just always learning. So working with, especially the role that we have as a PR agency that works in design, and I very much consider design to be my sector rather than PR. I don't really know other PR agencies particularly well, whereas I know lots and lots of design agencies and love what they do. I love the fact that we'll have agencies on the West Coast of America who are working in Silicon Valley, so I can really get my head inside what they're doing for the firms in Silicon Valley. Whereas we've also got companies that, I don't know, one of our agencies just rebranded Monzo, so start looking at that and sort of fintech side of things. I'll start looking at the snacking market too. Like, there's so many different things throughout the day that all I need to do is look at what a client's doing and you suddenly can learn so much stuff. I just think it's constantly fascinating. Design as a sector, if I describe it to a friend, so it sounds quite niche, but in actual fact, nearly every business uses design. So it means you can kind of get to learn about absolutely everything.
I'm the same. I love learning anything, even the most blandest of clients I've had in my time. I've always been like, oh, that's amazing. That's how they work. And I would have never known that.
And from my personal point of view, I like running my own company because it gives me a real opportunity to be part of that and be part of what's going on in design and the opportunity to be able to change things. I do think the things that we're doing with diversity will have an effect in the future, which makes me really happy.
Amazing. So how do you fuel your own creativity?
I listen to loads of podcasts. I listen to loads of, just read constantly, looking at all the sort of business press and new articles coming out, what's coming out in like FASCO and Forbes. And I like being able to change my mind really quickly on things as well. I like just learning lots of new stuff and realizing I was actually wrong about that and having new opinions constantly about things.
Yeah, there's something so inspiring when you, like you're saying, you change your opinion. You're like, oh, I was thinking this and now I see it as this. It's such a, I don't know, there must be something cognitively that happens. It's almost like a dopamine hit or something, because yeah, it's like that little spark goes off and you're like, oh, I've learned something new. I mean I absolutely agree with that. That's kind of where I'm at. My most happiness is where I'm like, oh, I was going this way but now I'm going that way.
I mean, with the amount of information that's out there, you can never really feel like you're on top of everything because there's just so much. But, you know, that's the reason why you pick and choose the right things. It's really good fun.
So if someone is considering founding a creative business, what advice would you give them in terms of setting it up and also managing it?
Gosh, in terms of setting it up, I would definitely do it with a business partner, but that's just from my personal point of view. A business partner with complementary skills, basically, so you can come together and nail different sides of your personality that wouldn't necessarily be there. But I mean, it's the rigorous management side of things, I think, is really important. Getting the structure right. So we've got, I mean, at Redsetter now, we've developed into this, but having Alex and, you know, having me and Alex and then having our senior management team around us with our senior account directors and Vicky, our head of comms, all come together to form our senior management team. And then they can run the rest of the company. It basically makes it much less risky. So for example, a couple of months ago, I had a really horrible accident. I tripped over in our garden, the most boring way to injure yourself. I tripped over in our garden, was carrying a glass and it went into my eye. It smashed and went to my eye and I basically really messed my eye up. And it will get better, but it'll be a long process. But I have had to take about, God, I took the first 5 or 6 weeks off and now I'm just doing mornings basically because I end up getting really tired in the afternoons. But it'll be a gradual return. But if I hadn't have had that really talented senior account team around me, senior leadership team around me, I don't know what would have happened to my role, whereas it's really easy just to delegate what I do to everyone else around me. So having that support, so everyone's job's protected, basically, that if one person got ill, there's people to probably a bit more focused around what would happen if someone else had an accident like me at the moment, and making sure there's a team around them to support them. I think that makes the whole thing less stressful for everybody, because if you do wake up and you've got COVID or something, you have got a team that can take all that pressure off you. You're not sitting there having to work through it. So that kind of, I don't know, rigorous structure, so that makes sense within the company, so everyone feels supported, I think is really kind of important to setting up a really successful, happy business, basically, where people feel they've got that support.
So what's coming up for you and Red Setter and the Design Community Hub in the coming months?
The main thing, so it's, this has been slightly delayed because of the accident I had. It was supposed to be launching in January, but I've pushed it to Easter, sort of April time, spring at the moment. But I am launching a new thing that's kind of part Red Setter, part Design Community Hub, basically called Adopt Your Local School. So the point of the whole thing is to get every design agency, brand agency, whatever, around the UK to literally sort of adopt their local school and see that as a place that they can have real impact. So if everyone chooses generally a high school, so sort of a secondary school, I'm thinking if that we could go in, I've started doing some careers talks just around local schools in Brighton. If we can go in and speak to year 10s, maybe year 9, 10s, the people I've been speaking to, and talk to them about what a career in design can look like from a branding point of view or from a whatever point of view, whatever your agency does. If they can go in and actually start communicating with the kids and telling them about what they can do and telling them they don't have to be a designer to do that. I mean, I would never have known what an account manager in a branding agency was until I started working in a branding agency, basically. But agencies being able to go in and educate people about it, hopefully again should chip away at the whole diversity problem, so people will see it as a career for them and see what they can do and convince their parents it's actually a really good career to have. You can make money out of it, you can be really happy doing it, it's a very secure career to have. Parents often put it into the same pot as being a penniless artist, that kind of idea. If you do art at school, you're either going to be a penniless artist or an art teacher. Moving away from that, basically, and saying obviously you can be an artist and be really successful, but it's a really solid career choice. So I think if you chip away at that level and kids of that age and on that scale as well, sort of throughout the whole country, where we should be able to change things.
Oh, I love that. I think it's so important. I think it is getting in early at that level before those decisions are made, going off to uni, if that's what people choose to do.
Yeah,
because one, you also don't necessarily need to go to uni to work in design. You know, you can do apprenticeships. You can also work at the bottom and work your way up in an agency or a design team. So I love that. Just, it's again, giving the tools and the information out there so people are making informed decisions rather than coming out of uni and being, oh, I'm not sure I want to do what I've studied. Not there's anything wrong with that, but you know, giving them a bit more information earlier on so they again are more informed. That's such a brilliant concept and idea. So excited about that.
Getting people to realize that it's a really good career option for them. It can be a really exciting thing to do.
Well, look, we're coming to the end of the interview, and something I ask everyone before they leave is there a career or job in the creative industries you know little about, and then I can potentially get someone in that role on the podcast? And also, is there a woman or someone who identifies as non-binary that you would like to recommend that I get in touch with who works in the creative sector, and then I could potentially get them on the podcast as well?
The person that springs to mind, especially with what you do and your side of things at Greater Than 11%, is Nat Mayer. Check out an organisation called Kerning the Gap. Nat set it up. It's all about getting the gender balance right in design, basically. And she's put huge amounts into everything from mentorships to getting women together to, well, women or non-binary people together to talk about how they can get on and how they can stop this 11% insane figure.
I love Kerning the Gap. I mean, that is brilliant.
It's brilliant. Love it. I have a real passion for the sort of music side of things. I do a bit of DJing and love that sort of like more on the sort of house music side. But that kind of music producer, DJ, think about that kind of like, we've just bought a synthesizer. I'm trying to get into it with my little boy at the moment. He's 12 and wants to do music GCSE. So he's going to use that as a music, but any sort of any creativity around sort of music production and things I know very little about, but would love to know more about it.
Oh, amazing. Definitely. That sounds great. Claire, it's been so lovely talking to you. I love your energy. I love how passionate you are at just chipping away, because that just chipping away will have huge ripples. Red just sounds like it's doing amazing things and it has an amazing team. And I'm so happy that you're on the mend after your accident.
Thank you so much for today. I love what you're doing. I love all the stuff you're doing at Greater Than 11%. And it's been really good fun talking to you today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe to where you get your podcasts to make sure you're up to date with any new episode drops. And you can also follow us on Instagram, at GreaterThan11. A huge thank you to Eden Richards, who creates all Greater Than 11%'s artwork and edits this beautiful podcast.